Hello, welcome back to yet another Seller interview. In case you haven't seen me before, I'm Matt. I'm literally plastered all over the BioBot Pro channel. So if you haven't seen anything with myself in before, literally check out the rest of the channel. There's lots of amazing tutorials and more of these Seller interviews available. Today, I'm joined by a guy who is literally an FBA wizard. Darius, how are you doing?
I'm good, mate. How are you doing? You all right?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Cool. So we'll get right into it. So Darius, literally paint us a picture of you. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and a little bit about your Amazon business as well.
So my name is Darius, known as Haruni FBA on socials, a little shameless plug. But I've been in the Amazon space. I'm 27 years old now. I've been in the space for over three and a bit years. Selling on Amazon since I was 20, but just doing FBM stuff, which is fulfilled by merchants, so shipping it out yourself. And then for the last 3 years has been just focused on the FBA program, which is fulfilled by Amazon. So I run this, that business, and then I also teach students how to do it as well. So that's a big part of it, and I really enjoy the teaching aspect, but that's what I do. There we go.
So taking it like right back to the start, so how did you actually like get into Amazon? Like, where did you hear about it? So like, how did you actually get the ball rolling with just getting started with your business?
So back when I'm talking about when I was 20 is when I actually opened up my Amazon Seller Central account and got it open. And back then, Amazon FBA was very similar to how Forex is kind of viewed. You had lots of these gurus talking about what was FBA and what is FBA and all this kind of thing. And you'd see them and they were, you know, living a lavish lifestyle on, you know, driving a hired Lamborghini and, you know, driving on private jets, all this kind of thing. And being 20 years old and money hungry, I got kind of drawn into that. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted that kind of freedom that they clearly had. So that was what initially drew me to Amazon. And obviously I was of the opinion that, well, 9 times out of 10, when I'm buying something on Amazon, like I want to buy it from Amazon. I want the convenience. So if I'm doing it, everyone else is doing it as well. And I saw it as being some form of very, very fast growing platform, really, because it wasn't as big as it is now. Mm-hmm. It was probably about, I don't know, a third of the size, but at the same point, a third of the size back then was still huge. And also, once I realized that 9 times out of 10, when I buy something on Amazon, it's a normal seller like you and me that's selling it, not a business. Yeah. I actually thought it was Jeff that was selling it. You know, I thought it was Amazon. When I realized it was just a normal seller, I thought, goodness me, there's got to be a lot of money. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So that's what drew me to it. And I did FBM, as I say, for about 4 years. And when I say FBM, I mean, I was literally going down to Royal Mail and posting the stuff myself.
Yep.
And I would 9 times out of 10 probably make a break even or a loss because I didn't understand how to work out my profit. And I thought if I was buying something for £5 and selling it for 10, I must be making £5 profit, right? Mm-hmm. Not really accounting for Amazon fees, shipping, all this kind of stuff. I didn't know how to actually run an Amazon business. And so I was literally just start finding clearance things from Tesco's or Sainsbury's or something, scanning them on the Amazon seller app on my phone, seeing if there was any money in it, and then sending it to the customer once they bought it via Royal Mail, right? And it was only once I had no idea how to do FBA. So like, how do I actually ship the stuff? I understood how to buy it. Yep. How do I get it into Amazon and sell it? And then I got mentoring from someone way back in the day, and learned the basics of how to do it. And then from then it sort of scaled on and scaled up. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
And
so would you say like the big turning point in terms of like what you knew, you know, how to actually sort of like change from FBM to FBA, how to make sure that you were doing things right. Would you say that the big turning point was getting that mentoring?
I would say so, yeah. The turning point was I always knew that was the way that I needed to go. Like there's only, you know, it's kind of become a thing where I really wanted to start something that was going to give me more freedom, right? Mm. That was the whole aspect. And I understood that people were buying the stuff that I was selling, right? And I understood that that there was clearly a market there. But at the same point, I didn't understand how to take that to the next level. And there's only so many times you can go down to Royal Mail in a day. And there's only so many times you can, you know, carry an item, for example, it was a lot of the time was clearance books that I was doing, right? So like there's only so many books I can carry and put in the back of my Audi A3. There's only so many times I can go to Royal Mail. I've then effectively switched a job for a job. There's only so many Tesco's I can go to. And so I needed to find a way to make that more scalable. And it was when that kind of sort of fell in my lap and the universe gave me that, that I went, right, okay, that's clearly what it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. When you were getting started out as well, what was your budget looking like? As in, like, how much did you get started with? Like, what was your capital then?
So when I started, I was kind of sold a dream, right? I'll be honest. I was told that you could start with 500 quid and, be a millionaire by next Tuesday, and I stupidly believed it, right? I started with, inclusive of mentoring costs, around about £1,000, £1,200, and then after the mentoring, which was around about £800 at the time, I was left with about 400 quid. And then after I'd bought, back in the day, Bubble Pro didn't actually exist. When I first ever started my Amazon journey, Bubble Pro was not a thing. So just to fill everyone in on how we used to have to source, right? I used to have to get an app, like I would say I was on TK Maxx. I would have to copy the title, paste it into Amazon, see if the item is selling. If it was selling and it looked like it was enough of a price, I would have to then put that back into my inventory, wait, like add it to my inventory, wait 15 minutes for it to load, only to find out that I'm making no profit. Right. So that is how we used to have to source back in the day, which is why when Bubble Pro came onto the scene, everyone just went, oh my God. Right. So that is literally like what happened with that, And my budget was around about sort of 400 quid, roughly, after I'd paid back. I think I only had Jungle Scout when I first started. That was it. That's all we had. Right. And even that, I didn't get till a couple of months in because it was quite spenny. So I had about £400 after I bought boxes, packing tape, poly bags, all that kind of thing, probably about 350, 320. And then I just built that up over time. So I kind of proved concept to myself for a few months. And I was also working a 9 to 5 at the same time as well, and just progressively putting money in, every single month and just building it up. 500 quid every single month was just going into this Amazon business, along with the profits being regurgitated. And then fast forward about a year and a half, I was then able to pull my first salary out, and it was absolutely insane. I genuinely, the first thing I did was go down Miller & Carter with the missus and have a fantastic time, and also put it on the business, so I didn't even spend my own money, which was even better, right? But that's how I got started, just literally compounding it and compounding it and compounding it and building it up. Because when you start out, you'll have a very high account level reserve. Amazon will hold a lot of money back from you, and you will probably struggle to sell versus other bigger sellers as well, because you're not going to get as much buy box rotation, all this kind of stuff. Terminology that a new seller, if they're watching this, will go, what is he talking about? But it's not that complex once you've been in the market for a while, But there we go. Hope that answers the question.
Hopefully.
Sorry, I went on every, I knocked on every single door to answer that one, mate. Sorry about
No, it's all right,
that.
it's all good. And so comparing then to now, obviously there's going to be like a massive difference, but what would you say are some of the key differences between back then and now for you and your business?
So big differences is there's now a lot of, if I was a brand new seller jumping in the space now, there is a lot more softwares, and I know people preach about softwares. This isn't even like an affiliate type of thing. This is just in general, like there are softwares that make sourcing a hell of a lot more efficient, right? There's Barbot Pro, people still use Jungle Scout. There's other free add-ons that you can get that free, like DS Amazon Quick View and all that kind of thing, that you just, it helps you. Amazon Suggestion Expander is free. It helps you. There's lots of different things that you can use to make your sourcing more efficient. That's one big key difference. The other key difference is how Amazon was 3 years ago is very different to how it is now. You've had the evolution of certain lead groups for sourcing. You have people that are in the space that try to teach, and they teach in the wrong way. So people then come into the market without the correct education. So they don't know how to compete on listings. They don't know how Amazon works, all this kind of thing. And so as a result, you then have to approach if you're looking at your chessboard, which is your Amazon business, you then can't just go, knight to e4. You have to be like, right, okay, let's think a bit more strategically about this. If I'm competing with a new seller and they've only got 20 units in and the listing does about 30 sales a day, right, you just sell out, you go, and I will do my own thing. There's ways that you approach it, but that's a big key difference. And then key differences for me as a person, I am now VAT registered as of about 8 months ago. And so that again brings its whole new level of challenges that you then have to overcome. You know, you can't source in the same way. Pre-VAT, you just send anything with ROI. Yeah, just send it. Oi, go, Joe, go. You know, you find something with 25% ROI, depending on how much it sells per month. You might just go, yeah, cool, I'll send it. Right. After you're selling something with 25% ROI, you are paying Rishi Sunak every single penny and then some. Do you know what I'm saying? So it differences in how you do it. Differences for me as a business as well. It is the bigger you get and the more you want to scale this, the more you have to work out how can I systemize and scale this? And it becomes more of a, you know, you are now a director of a business and it becomes a case of, right, I have an issue. How do I solve it? You know, there's a very famous quote by a guy called Jack Ma, who is the guy that actually runs Alibaba, right? Which we all buy stuff from if we do private label, right? And he said that being a director of a business is not being the smartest person in the room. It is about getting the smartest people in the room to work cohesively together, right? So you then you're presented with an issue. You know, you might be doing a six-figure strategy, right? Which is, you know, get you to 100K. Retail arb will get you to 100K. You know, a couple of wholesale products will get you to 100K, right? And that revenue per year. I'm not talking about profit, right? Revenue per year. And if you want to then scale that to a multi-status, well, then you need to do something a little bit differently. You know, you can't. There's only so many, you know, units you can prep per day. There's only so much stock, you know, products you can find. There's only so many brands you can contact. So you then have to work out, how am I going to scale this and do it? So now I've got, you know, prep centers that do my prep for me. I've got virtual assistants that source for me, which you have to train. It's not a case of, you know, people think you just get a virtual assistant, plug and play, there you go. They'll find you £1 million worth of products a month. No, you have to teach them, right? They come trained to a certain point, and then you have to tell them how you want it to be done. So unless you know how to do it, don't get a VA, right? But then it's a case of, okay, employees, how can I then create SOPs? How can I scale this? So that's a big difference. When I started, I didn't have to think about any of that. And now that you want to take this and make it something that is actually, you know, we're at 3 p.m. on a Thursday and I'm sat at home. Usually 3 p.m. 2 years ago, when I had my 9 to 5, I'd be sat in a boring office getting told when I can go for a toilet break by my manager. Big differences. Yeah. Do you see what I'm saying? There you go.
Definitely look like you're loving it now.
Mate, it's the freedom, right? Obviously, I'm not where I want to be, and there's goals where you want to get to. But at the same point, if someone had told me 3 years ago, when I first ever started my Amazon business, 3 years' time you'll be doing this, and you'll be at this results and doing this, and have, you know, have employees. What? Right? I've been like, nah, surely not. Like, I would have laughed at you 5 years ago. You tell me I'm selling on Amazon, and that's how I'm making my money. I would have creased. Because I didn't even understand. I'd be like, what? I'm selling books. I'm selling books and I'm making a living from it. No. And obviously, I don't sell books now. But the point is, you know, back then I was buying books and clearance from Tesco's. And am I doing that? No. So there you go, mate. That's the big differences. Big differences.
And talking about like employees and stuff and having virtual assistants, because obviously like I can imagine like just you know bit like being responsible for someone in that kind of way. And like having them on board like as part of your business like that, it's like a massive thing. So tell me a little bit about like getting into hiring like virtual assistants and how you went about that and like the sort of things that you would say to sort of like look out for when you actually go and hire someone and how you know someone is gonna, well, obviously you're not gonna know till you know, but how you would make a judgment on whether or not to hire someone.
So the way that I've worked, and this is both with virtual assistants and also with students that I teach in general, because as I said, the virtual assistant will come trained. If you get them from a reputable place, and I'm not going to plug them, but you know, simple Google search will show you know, some places that are doing specifically Amazon virtual assistants, and that is what I would say to search, but I won't plug here, right? Is th when someone's coming on board with you, the key principle, regardless of student, like I say, or virtual assistant, you've got to train is, I can work with someone that wants to learn, right? And the key element is someone that is has a drive and a want and a desire to learn and to understand, right? Because you can't teach effort. Yeah, you can't. That's the one thing you can't teach, and you can't teach work ethic. You know, they're kind of hand in hand, right? But I can teach someone that is finding me products that don't meet my criteria, right? I can teach someone that isn't perhaps finding as many as that I want them per day, or isn't as efficient. I can teach all of that, but I can't teach that. So that's what I would say is, does that person have the right drive? Do they have the same goals as you in terms of, do they want to be in a workplace for a longer period of time? You don't want to spend, 6 weeks training someone how to do everything and how to be basically a mini version of you, and then they suddenly go, oh, well, actually, I want to go work with this person. And you're like, sick, right? So that is something that's really important. And then when you're bringing people on board, it's just about learning to manage, right? So there's loads of different books that you can read that will help you in terms of management. But not just the management, when you're getting employees on, your whole business will change, right? So what I mean by that is, if I'm sourcing myself, I will buy items as and when I source them, right? So say I sit down to source for 1 week out of the month. 1 week out of the month is suddenly going to be my purchasing week, right? And then I might do replens 3 weeks later. So because you work out, well, Amazon in the UK is roughly about a 3 week cycle, something like that, pre Q4. Q4 is a bit longer, but rest of the year, you're looking at 3 week cycle. So I send something in, for example, on the 1st of January. It will then take some, maybe about a week to get into Amazon, right? And then it might take another week for them to do it in fulfillment center, transfer somewhere. And so at 2 weeks, it's then in live. And then in the third week, I'm selling through stuff. So I might have to think about replenishing items around 3 weeks in. So that's a 3 week cycle. So month week one of the month, I'm doing my product sourcing and my purchasing. Third week of the month, I'm maybe doing some replens, and you're working like that. As soon as I've got a VA, they're now finding me items every single day. So my purchasing style completely changes, right? And I'm now not just doing purchasing 1 week, I'm doing it every day, or I'm doing it weekly, right? And my replens are now going to be weekly as well, right? Because I've then got items that I was buying, 3 weeks ago, and also subsequently that I might then need to replan and all this kind of thing. Yeah. So your whole business will change, and the way you approach it needs to change. If you approach the business when you hire someone as you did when you were just you, you will fail. Right. And so it completely changed. And then obviously you then have to work out how to motivate people, how to encourage them in the right way, how to discipline in a correct way as well, which is really important. If someone's not up to scratch, you can't just come down like a ton of bricks, because that will massively lower morale. You have to approach it in the right way. So that's when I talk about books being a really, really good way to look at things, or podcasts or YouTube, and just sort of soak up the knowledge of people that are actively doing what you want and are where you want to be, to then be able to take your business to the next level. Alex Hormozi is a fantastic person to watch if you're looking at that kind of thing. There is, I believe, a guy called Ben, I want to say Ben Alistair, on TikTok, who's also a great guy. I might be murdering the pronunciation of his surname. You got, like, for example, the eMyth, which is fantastic if you want to learn how to actually organize your business for spend and all this kind of stuff. That's fantastic. Yeah, those kind of, just soak up information. That's probably the biggest tip I'd give.
No, that's really awesome, and I appreciate the recommendation as well. I was literally just about to ask that as well for anyone that was curious. But in regards to like motivation and goals and stuff, obviously you've got a load of that, hence why you are where you are now. But like in terms of like holding yourself accountable, like making yourself a timetable, like what to do and when, what do you find is the best way to do that? Like how do you like plan your week? Like how do you do that?
Everything that I work out, for example, for me, I've got my regular stuff, right? So for example, and you work backwards from there. So for example, I always have a meeting with my VA in the morning, right? Always 10:30 to 11:30, I'm with my VA, because she's based in the Philippines, and that time period is when we have, it's right at the end of her shift, and I can go through things with her. So that's always a meeting. I then might have a meeting with my business partner like 2 times a week. I'm going to have that scheduled in. Google Meets calendar, and Google Calendar is how I do most of my stuff. And then if I've got other students, then they're going to be regular on the same time every single week for a set duration. So I'm going to have them. And then th throughout the week, I'm then going to fill in the gaps. So for example, I've got a lovely, call it the board of doom. You can't see it, but I've got loads of things written down. And as and when things are done, they get scribbled off, right? And they're sort of like non-time sensitive tasks, right? So if I need to do something during the day, for example, I need to call a brand, that's a time sensitive task that will go into the calendar, right? But things that can be picked and choosed, for example, I've got about 800 units to prep downstairs just because I'm doing some self prep on something rather than sending it to a prep center. That's not time sensitive. I can do that in the evening, I can sit down, put on a podcast and just bang that out and get a couple of boxes done, and that's ready for collection the next day. So that's just organizing, doing the things that are time sensitive when they need to be done, organizing your day to be able to accomplish those. And then the tasks that aren't time sensitive, do them when you need to do them and just sort of make sure you're figuring them out, Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Obviously, like you're doing some self prep, but having a prep center, like how big of a difference has that made to you and your business?
I mean, I only did self prep, and this is perhaps a thing. So when you're starting Amazon, right, especially even if you get a mentor, right, a lot of it is learning for the first time, right? So when I started my journey, I got a very basic level of mentoring, and I'm not going to poo-poo the person that taught me, but it was a basic level of mentoring. And it's very much like school. So that's why I'm saying I'm not going to poo-poo it, because school taught me a lot, right? But at the same point, did school teach me about how to survive in the real world, how to pay my taxes, how to, build a conservatory, all this kind of stuff? No, it didn't teach me any of that. And when I went out into the wide, wide world, I had to learn a lot of things myself. So when you're coming onto this, I perhaps was a bit reluctant to change what I was doing. So as a result, I kind of hit a ceiling very, very quickly. And then once you reach the ceiling, it's kind of like, for example, I don't know if you've heard the story of a lobster, but a lobster will physically shed its shell every single however long it is, and then have to physically regrow a new one to be it will reach a barrier, and then you have to, and I was very reluctant to shed my shell,
I didn't know that about lobsters.
Yeah, they physically shed their exoskeleton and grow a new one. They reach a point where they can't grow anymore. They have to shed it and grow a new one. It's quite an interesting fact about lobsters.
Bit of
Nuts, isn't
National
it?
Geographic in
There you
it.
go, mate. Right, but
Awesome.
it's sort of a metaphor that I'm using, because I reached a ceiling very quickly, and I was very reluctant to self to go away from self prep, especially when I looked online and a hell of a lot of the prep centers that I was seeing were very expensive. Right, and you'll find that a lot of the bigger ones are very expensive. They'll charge you a unit cost and probably a monthly subscription, like a gym, right? And then they'll charge you a box cost and a poly bag. And before you know it, per unit, you're looking at easily £1, £1.50. Yeah, and so suddenly that's like, well, what's the bloody point? If I'm making £2 profit per item pre VAT, I'm suddenly making 50p. What was that, right? I'd rather just do it myself. So I was very reluctant to do that. And then, universe being how it is, I'm quite a spiritual person. I believe the universe gives you what you need when you need it. And I got a prep center sort of come into my lap via something else, and they do it for very, very cheap for me, right? And how did that help my business? Well, suddenly I can get a whole pallet. I can order them. Multiple things happen when you get a prep center. Firstly, you can take in pallets, and the turnaround time, if I'm prepping a pallet myself, I have to bring that pallet in. I have to sort of unload it, right? I then have to get rid of the pallet that I've got at my house, right? So someone has to come collect it and get rid, or I've got to take it to the dump, which is time, yeah? But then I have to then work that. So it's got to take time away from a money-making task, i.e. sourcing products, speaking to brands. And I've then got to look for, it is still a money-making task, but it's stagnant money. It's not new money, right? So I then have to take time away, and I have to prep it. I have to factor that in. I then have to send it. That pallet might take me a week. I work with a prep center, that pallet is in and out the next day, right? Or they can store that. If I only want, say, I'm ordering 1,000 units and I only want to send in 400, they can keep the other 600 there, right? And it's in their warehouse, not in my gaff or in my garage, right? They've got it. So that's one big thing. Second thing is, you might speak to wholesalers that suddenly want you to have a forklift. Okay, well, suddenly you're working with a prep center. Guess who's got a forklift? Right, you're working with a prep center, that you work working with a wholesaler. They say, "Oh, we want you to have Arctic lorry access. We don't deliver to residential address." Who's got Arctic lorry access and no residential address? Right, so suddenly it's like little light bulbs, isn't it? Right, and I'm saying this now, and people are probably going, "Yeah, I've spoken to a wholesaler that said that to me." Right, do you see what I'm saying? So like, that's one big benefit, you know. So like that, those are a couple of massive USPs. But more importantly, the fact that when I'm looking at things, if I'm looking at an item, say I'm buying at 1,000 units and I'm making £3 profit per unit, that's 3 grand potential profit. If I've got a prem center that charges me, for example, 50p a unit, right? I'm bringing that those 1,000 units in. They're going to prep it for me for 500 quid. I've made 2.5 grand and I've not done anything. All I've done is just logistically organized that to be sold from there. But, and obviously, I get a little bit cheaper prep than that, and you know, profits will be different. But that's an example. If I'm making 3 grand and I'm paying someone 500 quid, I've made 2.5 grand of what you would consider almost passive income, right? And we talk about return on effort as well. It's something else we talk about within the space, return on effort. So I feel like what I think one of my friends in the space, FBALNF, he was speaking about this the other day. It's really important. So if I'm, for example, self-prepping an item and I have a two pack of say, for example, shower gels, right? A two pack of shower gels versus a one pack. That two pack, I have to poly bag it, I have to put, you know, a label on it and a solder set, can't fit as many in a box, all this kind of thing. The single unit, boom, single, boom, 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 just chuck labels on, really nice and simple. Return on effort, if I've got a prep center, 1,000 unit. Hi, Mr. Wholesaler, can I have 1,000 units? Goes to this place. Yes, sweet. Put it in the Google Sheet for the prep center. It's already my inventory. They do the labels, they do the printing, they do the shipment. They can probably ship it as a pallet as well, which will cost you a bucket load less than selling it as boxes, right? Than sending it as boxes. So again, massive USPs. Yeah. So, but I was very reluctant to do that. I only did that about 8, 9 months ago. I switched over to doing a prep center. And yes, it helped me massively in terms of organization, in terms of being able to source more products and be more, you know, efficient with my time. And it frees you up to be able to do other things that are money making within the business. For example, creating SOPs for your colleague, your employees to follow, sourcing more products, speaking to more brands, you know, organizing logistically the Amazon business itself, you know, competing with people, blah, 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 you know, loads of different things. Yeah.
I mean, just getting your space back, like not tripping over boxes in the hallways.
But that's it, mate. That's it. Like currently, I have about 1,000 units. Well, no, less than about 700 units now, because I've sent about 400 units in, 600, 700, something like that. And they're downstairs, and it's going to get in the way, but they're going to go, right? But it's I wanted to self prep that. You know, it's very, very return on effort for that is very low, right? But that's do you see what I'm saying? So like that's basically the idea of it is if you've got something that you can just in and out, really nice and easy. Do you know what I
Nice.
mean?
Awesome. And before we I want to ask like a couple of like general questions before we finish off, just so that way we have the entertainment factor in the interview as we always do. Before we move on to that, the last thing that I wanted to ask was in terms of software. So we've touched on this in places earlier, you know, having BuyBot Pro and such. Are there any other softwares that you use in your business?
So I use BuyBot Pro softwares. I use BuyBot Pro. I use Jungle Snail, Jungle Scout. We call it Jungle Snail because it's very slow, right? And we I use Amazon Suggestion Expander that I mentioned earlier, and DS Amazon Quick View. Those two are free. You've got no excuse not to get them, and no one else talks about them other than me, right? So get them, right? They're usually the people that talk about them in the space are my students, which is great. But Amazon Suggestion Expander and specifically DS Amazon Quick View is really good. Although BuyBot Pro does actually have a feature that's very similar to it now, being able to see who's on the listing without going into it. So there is actually, you don't really need that now if you've got BuyBot Pro. But yeah, so I use those four are my main ones. And then I also use some software to track my sales as well, which is really important. I also use Profit Protector Pro. For my repricing, rather than doing it all manually. Back in the day before Profit Protector Pro, you would have to physically go in, and if someone is undercutting you by a penny, you are spending every, you know, waking moment on your phone going, you're doing a battle, you know, price war. They're at 5.99, you're at 98.97. It takes you about 3 hours, mate, to secure a buy box. Get a repricer. Yeah, it, you know, that it's a great bit of kit. You know, that it when we talk about softwares, as I mentioned, they aren't going to completely take you. If you're not doing any work, they're not going to take you from no work to £1 million a year. What they will do is make your business more efficient. That's the whole point of them. You know, I now don't have to copy and paste an ASIN and into Amazon, add it to my inventory and all that to see my profit. I just put the buy price into BuyBot Pro. And it does it all for me. And I can see whether I can sell it. I can see if it's hazmat. I can see, you know, variation count, what the reviews are doing, all this kind of thing, seller stock levels, who's winning most of the buy boxes, all this kind of stuff is there, readily available, along with all the keeper charts. It's helpful. Yeah. Profit Protector Pro. I don't have to sit for ages and reprice things now. It's helpful, you know. If Amazon suddenly takes away a buy box, I don't have to sit there and work out what is the bottom line before they give me it back. It does it for me. So it's just about making your time more efficient, and being more efficient is what takes you from a little side hustle to six figures, from six figures to multi, and then the people that are doing more than me that I know in the space that are doing, you know, seven figures and multi seven, they will tell you that then efficiency is the key to getting better and getting bigger, is being more efficient and controlling and time management and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Do you have a do you have a favorite repricing strategy in Profit Protect Pro? Do you use like a what?
I personally use a balanced. That's what I go for on 95% of my listings, is a balanced, because I also run, if I go for a more of aggressive one, I also run PPC, pay-per-click advertising, for some of my stuff as well. So I don't have to go as aggressive, yeah. But I would not advise anyone that does not understand PPC to just suddenly go and do pay-per-click advertising and all their stuff. Yeah, that is one thing I would say. Definitely get some form of education about it first, because if you start giving Jeff Bezos access to your business bank account and say, "There you go, spend the money on what you want, bro," he will. He will. There we go.
I'm pleased you said balance, though. Like,
Yeah, I always use the balance. There's some people that go super aggressive, and I personally don't really agree with that. I think you should just be more balanced. Or there is, trying to think, there's another one as well that's I think Passive Profit Maximizer as well that I use, and that one's really helpful as well for some of the ones that are more higher velocity, that I can just be a little bit more, so if I've got listings that are doing a couple of thousand sales a month, I can use that because it's calm, it's not going to crush the price, it would just allow me to be in buy box rotation, I'll still get my sales, you know.
Awesome.
There you
Awesome.
go.
I love the fact that you said balanced. I really, really do, because that's my favorite.
Is
So
it? Yeah, nice. And so we're both very passive, isn't it? Like, there's some people that teach to just crush price on stuff. It's just not the way to go. So there we go.
awesome. Right. And so the bit that you've been looking forward to in
Okay.
listening to everyone, the entertainment factor. So it's literally just me sitting here spouting out whatever question comes into my head, and it can literally be anything. So I
Okay.
mean, the first thing that I want to ask, and I would think as well that people watching probably think the same thing, what do you do to maintain your hair? Because
Well,
it is literally
I
perfect.
haven't had a trim in a minute, right? I haven't had a trim in a hot sec, but it's literally just little shameless plug, a little bit of got to be. I chuck that in there, hair dryer, get it going up, right? And then use a little brush and all this kind of thing. Yeah, thank you, mate. Appreciate it. The hairline's good. It's growing back
It is.
strong.
It's literally like
27 years old and I still haven't lost my hair. Touch wood, right? We're all good. What's the other one?
how often do you how often do you get a trim?
Once every 7 to 10 days, and I use a lovely guy called Dave, and he does my hair for me. Yeah, Dave from Sturdy Cuts. There you go.
How much does it cost you? Because it seems to be like different everywhere.
I'll check actually. I believe it's like £18, and he does me a deal as well because he does my beard as well. Nuts,
Oh,
isn't
okay.
it?
Right, so that's for beard as well.
Yeah. What were you gonna say? You get yours done for a fiver or something?
Well, I actually do my own.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I do my own.
There, mate. Well done. Let me find out. Yeah, £18. £18. There you go. And that's for it doesn't look like it now, but I get skin fade all the way around, all this kind of thing, and it's usually really fresh, and the beard looks a little bit less scraggy than it is. I'm due a trim, so there we go.
I think 18 with beard included as well is quite reasonable. Just because that, like, I mean, if it's just hair alone, like around here, around like this area, it tends to be sort of like 10, £12, something like that. But then, like, I've seen other
For a
places.
skin fade.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've
Okay. I need
seen
to come down your ends. Where
I've
wherever you're based, I'm coming there. We'll talk offline. I'm going to come down your ends and get trimmed. Because if it's less than a fiver's worth of petrol, it's worth my time. Do you know what I mean?
I've seen it like just like on my travels and stuff, like, you know, it's just the sort of thing that you just look out the window and that's what you see. Not that I'm hunting down to like hairdressers and stuff like that, but it's just one of those things that you just sort of notice it. Like other places I've been in search, it's like double that amount, and
Yeah.
I don't understand how that can be a thing. So I mean, I just basically wonder, because like as I say, like your hair is literally like
Thanks,
like
man.
perfect.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it. That's a
It's
very nice compliment to say. And I'm genuinely am due a trim, but I appreciate you saying that.
sick.
But yeah, it comes down to perceived value, doesn't it? It's very much like why it's like asking the question, why would someone spend £14 on something on Amazon when they can go down the corner and get it for £6.99? Well, it's perceived value and it's convenience, isn't it? You know, like it's cheaper for me to come up probably to where you are, but if you're based in Timbuktu, it's not worth my time. Do you know what I'm saying? So that it's perceived value, isn't it? And the It is perceived value is just how much someone is willing to pay for it. You know, there's pieces of art that sell for millions of pounds that someone has literally just gone and chucked some paint on the canvas, but someone thinks it's worth 2 million quid. It's worth 2 million quid, you know?
Earlier you mentioned that when you're doing prep and stuff, you'll stick on a podcast and whatnot. On the back of that, like what kinds of podcasts and like hand in hand with that, like what kinds of like music are like your go-tos?
So
And do you have like a playlist for like this is my prep playlist, like let's like
I do actually. There's
I have a different one for like shower time or whatever it is.
I do. So there's a playlist by a guy called Sean Lee, and he made it. And this is what I use when I am sourcing products. It's called Cosmic 2020, and he made it obviously in 2020, right? And it's got a little flying saucer next to it, and there's quite a few thousand people that listen to it. That for me is just really like nice zony out music that I can just stick on. It's calming, and I can just, you know, I'll put it with my I've got my Bose headphones, and I'll just get myself into a little bit of hyper focus and just get stuff done. But in terms of like podcasts and things, when I'm doing prep, there is a podcast by a guy called Des. Goodbye, Poor Hello Rich.
Yes.
He does a really nice podcast. The Joe Rogan Experience. I love that one as well. And also, I don't want to swear on that, but Poo and Gigs, Shiz and Gigs. Yeah, that one. That's also a really good podcast. I enjoy that one as well. We just I didn't want to swear on the thing, but there you go. So those are really nice, and I put them on. And you know, can you do it alongside a 9 to 5? Well, yes, you can. I literally used to do. I did a home-based job, and I'd be on the phone to a customer, packing stuff in poly bags and chucking it over my shoulder. So you can do it, right? It's literally just go and call people in your lunch breaks and stuff. It is what it is. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, that's what I love in terms of a podcast. There you go.
Awesome. And my final sort of like random question, completely unrelated to anything that we've talked about,
Okay.
is it, and I've asked this to a few others as well, and the answer is different every single time.
Cool.
But if you could have any superpower, right? What would it be, and why?
Cool. So I've already answered this, mate. And to be honest, right, this used to be a Tinder thing that I'd ask people way back when I was like 18, talking to girls on Tinder. So I used to ask them, "What would you super like?" Really bad chat up line. But yeah, what would mine be? I would love to be able to teleport. That would be my thing. Teleportation. I really really like the idea of that. Why would I like that? Various reasons. One, I jump inside a bank and jump out. See you later. But two, wake up in the morning, fancy some croissants. Boom, you're in France, you know. I fancy having pizza for lunch. Boom, you're in Italy. Like whatever you want to do, you're there. Yeah, I feel like that's like the best superpower in my opinion.
No,
Yeah, because you know.
I've often thought I'd love to just teleport. So I would be very much inclined to agree with you on that one.
There you go. Because I like, think about it, if you want to fly, you have to physically. That's like driving. I now have to drive somewhere, right? Whereas teleporting, boom, I'm there. It's time efficient, isn't it? It comes down to efficiency again. I can be everywhere.
And did asking about superpowers work on Tinder as a chat up line? Really?
No. Yeah, in short, yeah, it got back in the day, no one was using it, so it was a good little. It got a few responses, but yeah, no, that, I from memory, I don't think I had much joy.
Do you actually have like a chat up line that you would use and
No,
think, oh, you know, that's quite good,
no,
or
no,
would
no.
you
If you want to, get good results, look, pick out something in the girl's profile, and then, you know, talk about that. If she's holding, you know, if she's got a poster behind of the Lion King, talk about the Lion King. You know, just something like that. Don't talk about something
be
random because
able to?
they, there's, yeah. But back in the day when I was 18, we're talking about like 9 years ago. Yeah, it's very, very different space right now than to what it is right now. There we go. There you go.
Awesome, amazing. So I mean, we've had like bits of everything in this interview. This has got so much in it. So like not only have you got like loads and loads of useful like Amazon knowledge, like stuff about VAs, prep centers. We've had a bit in National Geographic.
Yeah.
We've had some podcast and music recommendations. We all know like how great Darius's hair is, and we know what to do and what not to do when chatting people up. So we've got
I'd go more for the what not to do than what to do, mate, to be honest with you. I'll leave that.
And so before we wrap up, obviously, thank you so much for having joined me on this interview. Like there is so much value in this one. And there is definitely something for everyone. Before I let you go, please can you just remind everyone where it is that they can find you and follow your journey?
Cool. So it's at Haruni FBA, which I'm sure Matt will probably put on the screen or somewhere in the bio or whatever it is, or description. Haruni FBA, Haruni.FBA, excuse me. Yeah, on TikTok it's the same username. And yeah, that's basically it. That's, you've got two places, Instagram and TikTok. And if you want to reach out, if you think Amazon might be for you, doesn't necessarily have to be me, but what I would say is just make sure you're vetting the person you're going to go to and do some due diligence. And if you want to reach out to me, I'm always willing to take on new students. I enjoy teaching, and I'd love to work with you. So yeah, reach out, drop a follow, drop a like, and yeah, catch you
I
later.
can 1,000,000% vouch for Darius's channel as well, because it is one of the realest ones out there. Loads of useful advice, says it as it is. So there's a lot of value that you can get from it. So I definitely recommend
Appreciate
checking.
that, mate. Thank you. Cheers.
And cool. And before we wrap up, is there any sort of like final point that you would like to put out there for everyone?
One final thing that I'll say to people, regardless of whatever journey you're going to go into, be that Amazon FBA, affiliate marketing, or whatever it is, Forex, whatever journey you're going to go down, right? If you're going to do it, firstly, stick to it. Yeah, don't have shiny object syndrome and move around, because I feel like that's something that everyone has these days, is shiny object syndrome. And secondly, is focus on your own journey. Yeah, like there's a phrase, comparison is the thief of joy, right? That's the famous phrase. But an even better one came from one of the guys in the space called the Ultimate FBA, who's Johnny, is one of a really, really good mate of mine in the space. And he said to me on a call, don't compare your year three to someone else's year 10, right? So whatever journey you're on, someone else might be way further ahead than you. And also, social media is sometimes fake as anything, so don't believe what you see online. So just focus on your own journey. Don't have shiny object syndrome, get your head down, graft it, and you can get there. There you go.
Perfect. Thank you so much again, Darius. Really, really appreciate it. Thanks to everyone that watched as well. There will be links to Darius's channel and such in the description. And if you want to check out the other set of interviews as well, they're all part of a really convenient playlist. So you can literally flick through all of them. They're also going on Spotify and Apple Podcasts as well. So if you prefer to listen, then they're available there as well. So thanks once again, Darius. Really appreciate it. And I'll see everyone very soon.
Thanks for having me on. Cheers. Pleasure.
Thank you.